Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. On April 11th, 1970, Apollo 13 lifted off from Kennedy Space Center for what was to be the third mission to land on the moon. But within 2 days of liftoff, an oxygen tank exploded, crippling the spacecraft and putting the crew in danger. Despite limited power, loss of cabin heat, shortage of drinkable water, the crew returned safely on April 17th. Tom Durkin is Deputy Director of the NASA South Dakota Space Grant Consortium. He's with us on the line from Rapid City with more about that nearly fatal mission. Tom, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Well, thanks for having me on today, Carl.
Well, take us back to April 11th, 1970. Was NASA feeling confident after the success of the previous two moon landings?
Yes, they were feeling very confident. Although they were feeling that confidence, the mission controllers anyway were very well trained to be able to deal with unexpected problems, and that's exactly what happened. Although after the Apollo 11 and Apollo 12, the mission actually was going fairly flawlessly, not completely flawlessly, before the big accident, but it was definitely the series of problems that happened were beyond what they had imagined, and that's what makes it such an amazing story that they were able to get the astronauts back alive.
Who were the three astronauts?
Well, the three astronauts were Commander Jim Lovell. He was the command module, entire mission commander, and then Fred Hayes was the lunar module pilot. And then Jack Swigert was going to, he actually replaced astronaut Ken Mattingly, who about two and a half days before the mission was pulled. He was a prime crew member, but he was exposed to measles by astronaut Charlie Duke, and he hadn't had measles before, whereas Lovell and Hayes did. Ken Mattingly, Mattingly was the one that was pulled, and Jack Swigert then took his place. So those were the three that actually flew the mission.
Can you describe the Apollo 13 spacecraft for us? Now, this is made up of a couple of modules.
Yeah, there were actually three components. There was the command service module, which actually was two components. It was the command module, which as everybody refers to it as the capsule that the astronauts were going to spend the majority of their time in on their way to the moon and on the way back, and that's the part that had the heat shield that re-entered the Earth's atmosphere. That was the smallest of the three parts, and then there was the service module, which was not pressurized and did not hold people, but it held the oxygen tanks, the hydrogen tanks, the power, the fuel, and then there was the lunar module. That was the third piece. Which was originally designed just to be used for 2 days while Lovell and Hayes went down to the surface of the moon. But that ended up having to be the crew's lifeboat after the explosion happened for all three of them for 4 days.
Now, when did NASA realize that there was a problem?
Well, shortly after the liftoff, there was a slight problem. That's the minor one. The center a solid rocket shut off before it was supposed to, but they quickly calculated, were able to run the other four engines, and were able to continue the spacecraft on its trajectory around the Earth and then eventually onto the moon. That was the first minor, it was a problem, but it wasn't a significant one. The main problem occurred about 200,000 miles from Earth, about 8/10 of the way to the moon on the second day. And that actually occurred at about 55 hours and 53 minutes into the mission, and that's when Jack Swigert was instructed by the mission control personnel in Houston to stir the oxygen tanks, which was a routine procedure to keep the liquid oxygen, which kind of got very cold in that service module and it became kind of like a gooey substance. They wanted to keep that well stirred, so there were fans in the tank No one knew that there was a problem. One of the tanks had been damaged. And when Jack Swaggart flipped the switch at the instruction from Houston to stir those tanks, there was a faulty wire in the tank that caused a spark. And a few seconds later, the tank exploded. And that was the main problem.
And did they realize right away that what a major problem this was?
Not initially. The crew knew something serious had happened because there was a significant bang with and jolt with that explosion. About 2 minutes after Swaggart flipped the switch, he quickly radioed back to Houston that there was a problem, and Houston asked them to say that again because their screens, their computer screens, were blinking on and off. They figured it was just a simple a power loss, a temporary power loss, and they weren't initially thinking that it was super serious. Lovell then came on a few seconds later and said the famous words, "Houston, we've had a problem." And it took them probably at least, I would say, 20 minutes or so to realize the significance of the problem, and that it wasn't just an instrumentation glitch that would quickly come back online.
And did they at that time realize that they had to abort the mission and try to get back to Earth?
Well, they knew that they weren't going to land on the moon relatively soon after the explosion. So the mission then became one of survival, and so they changed the mission to just basically a flyby of the moon. There were two options. One was called a direct abort return mission, which would have turned the spacecraft around prior to reaching the moon. Normally, when you did a direct return mission like that, you would do it earlier in the trajectory to the moon, earlier in the path to the moon. It happened a little too late for that, although it was still possible. So the problem was that when the explosion occurred, they didn't know exactly where it was, but they knew that it was somewhere in the service module. They didn't know if it damaged the engine to the service module, and a direct abort return would require firing that engine, and they weren't confident that would work. And if they didn't execute that maneuver absolutely perfectly, the spacecraft would have continued on and crashed into the surface of the moon. So Gene Kranz, after collecting a ton of information from the scientists and engineers at Houston, decided to do what's called a free return trajectory, where they would swing around the moon, use the gravity assist of swinging around the moon and heading the spacecraft back to Earth, and using the engine on the lunar module, which they figured had a much greater chance of not being damaged. The problem with that was it extended the amount of time before they could get back to Earth from 1.5 days, which would have been possible if they did the direct abort return, to 4 days, a little over 4 days, going around the moon. And that's the option that they chose. And, of course, then they had to figure out how to keep the astronauts alive, because much of the life support systems had been knocked out in the explosion.
You're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Tom Durkin, Deputy Director of the NASA South Dakota Space Grant Consortium, talking about Apollo 13. It was 45 years ago that Apollo 13 lifted off from Kennedy Space Center for what was to be the third mission to land on the moon. But within a couple of days of liftoff, an oxygen tank exploded, crippling the spacecraft and putting the crew in danger. And Tom, what did they have to do then? I mean, what was the situation in getting back to Earth? I mean, I read that they had to deal with near freezing conditions. I mean, how precarious was this? I mean, really, was it? You know, how certain or uncertain was it that they were able to get back?
Actually, the crew, in reading some of the accounts from the crew members themselves, they figured that the chances of their getting back alive were probably pretty slim. But they never really focused on that because they were well trained, and they decide, you know, we're going to have to do hundreds of tasks to be able to get back safely. They relied, they trusted on the, they trusted the NASA personnel back at Houston to come up with the correct procedures to be able to tell them to do what's necessary to be able to get back. And the biggest thing, the first thing was they had to get out of the command module because the oxygen supply had been knocked out. So they quickly had to power down the command module and leave it powered down for the almost all the rest of those 4 days until they needed to get back in it shortly before reentering the Earth's atmosphere 4 days later and then power it up. And so they quickly got into the lunar module, which was their lifeboat, and they brought oxygen canisters that they could from the command module into the lunar module. They again had to figure out ways of making the life support system that was originally designed in that part of the spacecraft for two astronauts for 2 days to be able to support three astronauts for 4 days. And one of the other significant problems, as you mentioned, was that they had to really reduce the energy load. After they swung around the moon and it was going to take several days to get back to Earth, because they had so little power, they had to just rely on a minimum of power usage, and therefore it got very cold in the spacecraft and very uncomfortable. The amount of water that they had actually to drink was significantly reduced because the water had to be used for other things besides just drinking, like cooling instrumentation and things like that. So they got down to about 6 ounces a day. And they were getting dehydrated, but that was enough to keep them alive. Astronaut Fred Hayes actually ended up getting a urinary tract infection because of the reduced intake of water, and he got quite ill. But Lovell and Swaggart were able to remain healthy. They were just very uncomfortable. And then they also realized the other significant problem was that because there were three astronauts in there for that length of time, every time they exhaled, they were breathing out carbon dioxide. And the carbon dioxide levels were increasing in the lunar module atmosphere. For those that have seen the movie, they probably remember the part about they had these canisters of lithium hydroxide, which basically passed the cabin air through those canisters and removed CO2, removed the carbon dioxide. The canisters that were in the lunar module did not have the same fittings as the canisters in the command module. So although they brought the canisters from the command module and needed to use them, they had to figure out a way to retrofit those canisters to work correctly in the lunar module. And that's where they had to basically figure out how to put a round tube into a square peg in the lunar module canisters. And they were able to develop a procedure down in Houston, radio that up to the spacecraft, and with what they had in the spacecraft themselves, they were able to make an airtight seal, and those canisters worked, and they reduced the CO2 levels to the point where they knew they would have enough breathable oxygen and low enough CO2 levels to get back. Amazing story, really.
And they made it back safely on April 17th. What impact did Apollo 13 have on future missions?
I think one of the things that Apollo 13 did was NASA already had a tremendous amount of pride, but I think it just reinforced the knowledge that in working together as a team, this is one of the things NASA's famous for, that we can accomplish great things. And I think it obviously increased the pride of all the hundreds and actually the thousands of people who work at NASA to support the manned spaceflight program, but it reinvigorated it. And then the next four lunar landings that occurred after that, let's see, 14, 15, 16, and 17, were tremendously successful. and very few problems. So I think what it did was it refined our ability to develop extremely complicated technology and do an excellent job in it. And I think it also just refocused America's interest in the space program, because at that time, before the accident happened, after the pretty much flawless missions of Apollo 11 and 12, considering the cultural times with the Vietnam War, the Beatles that were breaking up at the time, they didn't even carry, the networks didn't even carry Apollo 13's television broadcast on the news until, of course, the problem happened, and then it became the number one news all the way back to Earth.
Now, Tom, on Sunday at the Journey Museum in Rapid City, you're giving a talk on Apollo 13, 45 years later. Before I let you go, quickly, what will you be sharing with the people that attend?
Well, I'm going to be trying to share information that you wouldn't necessarily have picked up in the movie, because a lot of people have seen the movie. So I want to all of the imagery and things will be actual imagery, and I want to be able to. Number one, show the young people that come the absolute amazing story of this successful failure, and that's what Apollo 13 went down in history as, is the successful failure. It failed in reaching the surface of the moon, but it was a tremendous success getting the astronauts back. And then for those of us who were alive during that time, again, I want to be able to show some of the things that you wouldn't have necessarily picked up in the movie, but are just as or even more interesting than the movie.
All right. Well, Tom, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us again on Dakota Midday.
You bet, Carl. Thank you.